You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, and welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. As always, it is my great pleasure to join you, and for you to join me as we discuss all aspects of movies, film festivals, independent films, what's out there, reviews, everything under the sun that's movies. We want to thank, of course, always our friend Alexa Foreman, who named the show Talking Pictures. And also, I'm going to kick off this week, getting back to an old format that I did in earlier episodes, where I make some recommendations of some stuff that just came to the Redbox and Netflix, or usually what's in the theater, but right now I'm respectfully don't need to promote any of the Avengers movies or any of that. Today we're going to talk about an independent film called Scout, titled Scout, that I saw at the Newport Beach Film Festival, and we're going to be joined by director Lori Welch from New York City. She's also going to be discussing a filmmaking group that she's a part of and is making their mark on the world. But first of all, my recommendations before Lori calls in are three things that came to the Redbox in the last few weeks. One is Wild with Reese Witherspoon, which she received an Oscar nomination. A great movie. A little bit on the art house side, but if you're willing to go with it and know that you're going to get more out of the movie than just entertainment, it is worth sticking with. I'm not the biggest fan of Reese Witherspoon other than her portrayal in Walk the Line. Talented, talented actress. She's just not my cup of tea. She was great in that. Wild is excellent. The next movie, Selma, I mentioned because today we're kind of honoring and noticing the vision of female filmmakers, and this was a female director, and interesting story. She had a background as a publicist for films. I've never heard of anyone taking that route of being a publicist until their film career takes off. So I highly recommend Selma. It is okay if you're young enough to not know what that's about, or Dr. King. I highly suggest you read up on it. Check it out. It's a big historical part of our nation's history. I'm going to bring our caller on right here. One moment. Aloha, Lori. Are you with us?
I am. Hi.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm just going to wrap up here on a recommendation that I was making. We thank Lori for joining us today. The last film is titled Still Alice, which hit the red box yesterday. Julianne Moore, of course, picked up her Oscar for it. Great portrayal of what happens with Alzheimer's disease, and I've had a couple of great aunts go through this, and it was an excellent portrayal. The best part of the movie is it was not sappy, and it did not go overboard to cater to your emotions. It stuck with the simple humanity of what she was going through. So again, Wild, Selma, and Still Alice fits with our theme today. Again, before we get into talking with Lori about her film Scout and this women's filmmaking community that she's a part of, I want to say that all opinions of show of myself represent the show. Anything Lori says represents herself. And also, there is nothing here today that we're doing to say men are better than women or women are better than men. We're just going to discuss female directors and what's going on in this community. So I want to just let you know that we're just here to celebrate that we all love movies. With that, we bring on Lori, and I want to make sure I pronounce your last name correct. Is it Welch?
Yes.
Okay, Lori Welch. She directed a film titled Scout, and I'll go into a little bit of the log line and synopsis, and then I'll mostly let Lori describe it because I am not a fan of talk shows where the host describes more about the film when they have the director on the phone. But this was a great film that I saw at Newport Beach Film Festival, and I'm sure Lori will be able to tell us about your next opportunity to see it or what its plans are. But this was a great film that really caught my attention. The programmer of the festival told me about it. It involves a road trip through Texas, and It just had great cinematography. And most importantly, for independent film these days, it's a very hard thing to do because I've been blessed to make some films of my own, is to find a vision, whatever the vision is. People don't have to necessarily agree with or like your vision, but to have a vision that is cohesive through the whole film is very rare. That was something that stuck out about this film and made me want to recommend it and talk with Lori further, and then you'll find out more about what some other things Lori has going on. But really what makes this film cool is, of course, we all have a little bit of Bonnie and Clyde in our blood if we like film history. So there's some nice homages to that without overdoing it. Again, that's another compliment I have for you, Lori, is you didn't just rely on making it Bonnie and Clyde.
Thank you.
But with that, what I'll do is I'll read the log line here, and then I'm always, like I said, more interested in how the filmmaker likes to explain the film, because I never want to give too much away, too, if I read the synopsis. But basically, log line here on Scout, and the performances here from younger actors were amazing. That's the other thing I think you guys can enjoy about this film is very few films nowadays have young actors keeping our attention for so long without it being that a young guy is playing Spider-Man or Superman or something else that draws us to it. So that's what I really liked about Scout, is that it was, especially hearing that it's a New York filmmaker and it takes place in Texas, that's always interesting because that adds a whole new dimension to couldn't be two more different places, in my opinion. But Scout, the log line here, a rebellious teenager, convinces a guy she barely knows to drive her across Texas to rescue her little sister, but being on the road soon turns into being on the run. Without being too personal, or however you want to go on with what the synopsis is for you, I guess we'll start with that basic filmmaking question is of what would you like to add to that synopsis that of course doesn't ruin anything for the audience?
For me, this film is really about two people who are complete opposites. We have our 15-year-old Scout who's lived in a very rural, very poor environment in Texas, getting by just on whatever ingenuity she has and a little bit of shoplifting, taking care of her younger sister and her great-grandmother. It's just the three of them. Her mother's dead. Her father's a carny who left the family pretty much right after the kids were born. And her sister gets taken away from her, and she has to go on this road trip to get her sister back. And she hooks up with this guy she's barely met, who's sort of a J.D. Salinger type character to me. He's this rich boy from Manhattan who's suicidal. He's been depressed most of his life. He's been sent to a very posh mental institute near Scout's house, and that's how she's met him. And he's someone who's been sort of emotionally neglected, and she's someone who's been physically neglected, and that's what bonds them. And these two complete opposites go off on a trip together and become each other's family, basically.
Well, that's great to use that, the opposites, because I think sometimes we forget in life how important, we're always looking for something that clicks, how important things are that can be found and what doesn't click, or enjoying what's kind of, I don't want to say different because I don't like labels, but what's unique. Mm-hmm. Of course, this being your second feature film, I'm sorry, I always forget to do a little bit of the bio. This is your second feature film, and you had your first feature film, which you co-wrote and directed, the award-winning Wrestling with Alligators, and this played Sundance and was nominated for a grand jury prize. It played many other festivals, won a Golden Award at the World Fest Flagstaff Festival and a Civil Award at the Houston Film Festival. This, and then of course aired on Showtime, Stars, and the Sundance Channel. And it's interesting now because when I first read your bio, I was thinking that I had heard of that before. I haven't seen it, but when I got to the part about Showtime Stars and Sundance, I realized that, oh, I've heard of this film, and I think this kind of speaks to some of the things we're going to get into later, where the average filmgoer will have heard of a film but hasn't heard of the filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And of course, I really enjoyed your film, so I have the utmost respect for your filmmaking. But I think that's something that we can touch on with the community. But I mean, looking here at the cast of J.O. Sanders, I mean, JFK is the film that made me want to get in the film business, so mm-hmm. I always have an attachment to him, even though he had a small role in that. Is there something that you can briefly share? Because we do cover a lot of film festivals, and we talk to filmmakers, obviously, that have films in festivals, but we always like to ask someone, we've had a few guests, what it's like to have a film in Sundance. Not the hype part, but has an artist to just kind of like experience that.
For me, I think the best part about having a film in Sundance was just finding out I had a film in Sundance. I think for at least 2 weeks, I was kind of just walking on air, going around like in my head, I'm going to Sundance, I'm going to Sundance. I was super excited about going there. It was great being there. It wasn't at that time quite the marketplace it is today. It wasn't all about the celebrities and the stars and what it's really become. It really was more about smaller films and filmmakers, and it was just a more personal experience, I think, than it is today. But it was also really scary, and it was competitive, and film fests have good things and bad things, and, you know, it's great to meet other filmmakers.
Oh, yeah.
The whole sales part of film festivals is nerve-wracking and scary, but yes, it was great.
Well,
it was great to have been at Sundance.
Well, that's interesting. I like that you shared that because we want, you know, a big part of the show is we want people to learn anything they possibly can about movies or the business, or if you just see this as entertainment. And that is something that what separates some festivals from the other is, you know, like if anyone's a fan of classic films, the Turner Classic Movies Festival, Film Festival happens in Hollywood. And what's cool about that is no one there is trying to get a break. No one is trying to make a deal. So you literally are just talking films and sharing your experiences. And that's what's really, really nice about it. But back to that, because of course, being movie lovers, both of us, we could spend the next hour talking about one film. I noticed here as I go through your director's statement, there's something that I think maybe you would like to share. I mean, I know people, I suggest that you go out and see this film, and I'm sharing this info because it would have been interesting for me to know this beforehand. I can look at it in hindsight and see how it was even more powerful, but in terms of your relation with your main actress, without being, you know, too personal or private with names or anything, what was that like to, and if you could explain what your attachment was with your lead actress. What was that like to direct someone?
Sure. I mean, I can tell the whole story. There's no secrets. The main actress who plays Scout is a young actress named India Enenga, who also is my daughter. And she has been acting, well, actually her first role was in Wrestling with Alligators when she was 3 years old. But then I prevented her from acting, let's say, anymore until she was 9 years old, when I finally got so sick of her asking me, can I please try acting? Can I please try acting? And I gave up and I said, yes, okay. So she's been acting professionally since she was nine. She's done about 6 independent films, lead roles in all of them. She's been in she was a series regular on the TV show Tremé for 4 seasons. She's now in the A&E series, The Return. She has one of the lead roles in that. And we'd always wanted to do something together. Pretty much ever since she started acting, I've, in a way, been directing her behind the scenes. And every time she does an audition, I've pretty much worked with her on it ahead of time. So I feel like I've been directing her forever. And we really just wanted to do a project together because I really know how, I feel like I really know how to get a great performance out of her, and we just have a shorthand. We have a way of talking that I wouldn't be able to do with any other actor in the world, where I know what to say to her to get, you know, to motivate her, hopefully, to do what I would like performance-wise. So we started just thinking of ideas of films that, you know, might be an interesting. She really wanted to play a character that she hadn't played before. She tended to sort of get cast in roles of the smart daughter of whoever. And she wanted to be something that was a little more feisty, a little more independent, not just sort of the smart rich kid that she'd played several times before. And The Professional had been her favorite movie of all time. And she just loved the part that Natalie Portman played in that movie, as did I. And we sort of took that as our beginning point of thinking of ideas for characters. And at the same time, another friend of mine, just completely out of the blue, suggested there was a French film from the 1960s, a wonderful film called Sundays in Sibel, that had been, I think, nominated for, or maybe even won, a Foreign Academy Award that year. And he thought that would be a great film for us to try and remake together. But we couldn't get the rights to make that. But both those films are the story of a younger girl going off on a journey with an older man that she doesn't really know, and sort of just an exploration of their relationship. And so out of that sort of grew our own take on the story, and we started writing it together, fleshed out the character together. And then she didn't really have time. She was busy at school, so I just kept writing on my own, but would send her drafts, and she'd read them and send back comments, and that's pretty much how the project started.
Wow, well, that's really great, and I like that you mentioned The Professional, because for those of you that don't know or haven't seen it, it is on Netflix now. I actually just loaded it into my queue a few nights ago. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in years, but that's Natalie Portman.
Film.
Yeah, great film, and I want to say if she was maybe 11, 12, I mean, this is young Natalie Portman. This is,
yeah,
know,
I think
this
it was, well, it's her first major role.
Right, exactly, and so people, I think, I always stress on this show, you need to go back to these older films. It's all due respect, I have buddies who do effects on these films, but it's not just about Iron Man 2 and Avengers 2. We need to pay attention to the earlier works of any artist. And I notice here on your director's statement, you mentioned Paper Moon, of course, the mm-hmm. all-time Tatum O'Neill winning an Oscar at age 9 or 10. I still think that's one of the best, I don't even call it childhood performances, I just call it performances. Thelma and Louise, so I can kind of see now looking at I looked through the director's statement, where these films kind of mesh without being as, you know, violent or out there as it was. And of course, it's really cool that you were able to, another thing that I can stress about Scout has, as I mentioned, these films, Paper Moon, Thelma and Louise, The Professional, if you have Luc Besson, Peter Bogdanovich, and Ridley Scott directing, and then even Bonnie and Clyde, Arthur Penn, you can kind of separate those as older classic directors. And the thing that I most loved about Scout was that it had something fresh to say. And road movies, let's face it, I mean, since biker films of the 60s, there's only so many times you can see the endless vista. There's only so many stories that we can actually tell that aren't the same themes. And Scout managed to really find this kind of humanity for, like you were saying, not the differences, but just some of the things that the characters are going through. And then, mm-hmm. of course, the thing that I always like to thank independent filmmakers for doing is you had Danny Glover in a small role, and you had Ellen Burstyn, and you didn't, which so many, I think you could, I'm sure you've seen films like this, so many indie filmmakers think, well, I get Ellen Burstyn, so I can let 10 other details slack because people will watch it because Ellen Burstyn, and or because Danny Glover. And I love to see now that independent filmmakers are finally moving away from that they can get a star for a few scenes or a, you know, a good role that maybe they trimmed some scenes down, and stick to what's important. So I guess I always ask, is there a conscious process, regardless that to get filmmakers like that, you have to not care who celebrities are, but is there a conscious process to be like, I want to make sure that people continue thinking about Scout and don't ever think that so-and-so is on screen with her?
That's an interesting question. No, I don't think I thought of it that way particularly. I mean, I was really blessed to have such a wonderful cast and to get these great actors, and they were all so brave. I mean, for an actor like Ellen Burstyn or Danny Glover to do a low-budget film where they don't have a trailer sitting out front and a driver waiting for them, and to be willing... I mean, Ellen Burstyn, one of the first things she said to us was, I want to look the way I look for real when I wake up in the morning. I don't want makeup. I don't want hair. That's not this character. I want to look the way the character should look. I don't want, you know, anyone to change that. And so, no, I mean, I think they're all sharing the screen. They're all doing their best. They're all important, and they're all doing what they need to do. But I never really thought of it that way necessarily, no. But still, you know, they were not the lead, but yes.
And you're putting yourself with the only other film I can think of that doesn't use her natural beauty or her presence is Requiem for a Dream.
Yes.
Which I know is meant to make her go downhill, but I guess subconsciously I was thinking, wow, this is really cool. They're just letting her look the way a grandma would look. They're not trying to make sure it's lit like some old classic film when the, you know, when Audrey Hepburn's eyes always seem to be bright, even if it's cloudy outside. I want to give an extra congratulations to this film for the actual age of the actress, because I was completely sold that she was supposed to be, I think, isn't it she's supposed to be 15 or 16 in the film?
Yeah, she's supposed to be 15.
Yeah, so the actual age, wow, that is really cool for an actress to be able to, because I know I couldn't really think about what my 15, 16 was like until I was like 25. Then I kind of had a grasp on what was going on and what I was really thinking or doing. So kudos to you guys for that, whether it was in the writing or whether it was just your guys' natural connection to be able to do that. Now with Scout and with, before we move on from Wrestling with Alligators, is that something that we can get on Netflix or DVD, Amazon Prime, or is that something that's available to us?
I haven't looked recently. It used to be on Netflix, but then someone told me that they didn't think it was anymore. I don't know. I think maybe people didn't return them and there weren't that many to begin with or something. So I know people have found it online, but I'm not quite sure where. But I think it is somewhere out there online.
Okay, yeah, because I'm really, as I had mentioned to you, when I made films, all I had was B horror and action movies. So they were on Netflix for like a month, and then Lord knows where they're at now. So I always tell anyone, we know as filmmakers to be grateful if we're even on Netflix, but sometimes it's like, oh, we were up for a week. Okay.
It was on Netflix for years, and then, I don't know, something happened.
Oh, congratulations. I was trying for months, too, so I'm very thankful for you. I know, before we go into mentioning some of your group and how that affected Scout, or the group thing, what made you choose Texas? A road trip in Texas is such a unique experience. So where did that come from?
There were a couple of reasons. One reason is some of my family's from Texas. My favorite grandmother was from Texas. And to me, it just felt she sort of embodied partially the spirit of the film that I was trying to tell. And it just felt right. And it just also a lot of a lot of characters that sort of influenced me, young girl characters from plays and stuff when I was growing up, like Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird or Frankie in Remember the Wedding. They were almost all the characters that for some reason really resonated with me were Southern characters. And so it just, and the look of Texas was just felt right. The desert, the barrenness that's there, as well as there was just, it's part of the pioneer spirit, I guess, was what felt, and that to me, Texas embodies that spirit, was what felt important to Scout's character and where she should be from.
Oh, that's a wonderful subtext of kind of just moving into the unknown, and your car is your carriage, and wow, that's really great. I always tell people, like I told you, you know, driving through Texas is I think the closest you can get to being stuck in the middle of the ocean.
yeah.
Just there's, you know, and it's really kind of weird. There's those moments where you're like, gosh, if I blew a tire right now, like, would I be here for a week? Or, and it's really kind of just, I tell people to see it once just to understand what it's like. But
yeah, there's
that,
also a part of Texas that it's sort of stuck still in the 50s or something. There's just, things haven't changed much. And I just like the interestingness of that look visually. I just think it's very striking and interesting where things are still kind of stuck in the past and just decaying and the dryness.
Well,
and the heat.
I like that you say that because I like when I went there, people said there's Texas, then there's Austin.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like,
yes.
Knowing my personality, they're like, you're going to love Austin. The rest, you're just going to be like, you got to see it, and then you're going to move on. And I mean, being a history buff, I liked going to Dallas. I mean, I wasn't excited to see where the president was shot, but it was just unique to see. But I've been to El Paso and that I really enjoyed. And that was something, again, that Scout does that captures when a director can capture exactly, I always say, and sometimes people look at me like I'm funny, but I think filmmakers understand this. Where a film can almost smell the way you remember it smelling. So it was like, I felt cooped up. I felt like that hot air or that farm smell or that just that there's been nothing but gasoline trucks, big rigs driving around. There's just these weird, you just have so many senses that get alarmed when you're in the middle of Texas. So I really liked how the film captured that. If we could give your cinematographer a shout out, I would love to mention who that is.
Sure. Austin Schmidt was our cinematographer and he did a great job. He held that camera 15 hours a day, for a month straight, never had a tripod pretty much. He did a great job.
No tripods in that movie?
Only for the New York stuff. Only for Sam's character a couple times where there was their tripod. The rest of the time was all handheld.
Wow.
So.
Wow. That's, and, you know, that's the other aspect of this show. For any new listeners, we want it to be able to be just audience talk, sometimes just film, but occasionally when it slips into filmmaker talk, we encourage people that you can also learn from that too, because it helps you understand just what filmmakers go through. I know when I saw it, I think I'd mentioned to you an email, my thought was, man, how many company moves were there? And
yeah,
what
there
was
are
that
a lot.
Like? You know, shooting a road movie, I just thought, oh my gosh, like this might have been a time where they were glad they didn't have 20 trailers and a production office in 3 states. But with that, we can segue into, now I feel sometimes so, this is why I love film, because you can never know everything, but if this group is obviously more known and famous and has moved around to different parts of the world, it was news to me when Lori told me about it over email when we were discussing this. And again, this is the Newport Beach Film Festival screening of Scout. Before I go into this group, is there anything you can tell us about any upcoming screenings of Scout so we can make sure and promote that?
We don't know for sure yet where we're next playing. We've applied to a bunch more festivals, but most of them aren't until the fall, so we haven't heard yet. We are also presently talking to distributors and working on foreign sales. Our foreign sales agent is over in Cannes right now, selling our film, I hope, over there. So we're hoping that it's going to be coming to a theater near you or a TV near you sometime, but it could take a little while. Never a fast process. Even if we sold it tomorrow, it could still be a year before anyone gets to see it. So.
Oh, yes, yes. I mean, that's a cool thing. I'll tell you that you do have some, here's some news that you'll like with Newport. In the last, this was my fifth year covering it. Last year, I saw six films from Newport, and only two were recent because one had Jane Fonda and one had Joaquin Phoenix. But the other four had been within the last 2 years. So Newport had a good ratio of stuff that they premiered that hit Netflix. So if that helps any of your filmmaker thoughts that we do, I don't want to say voodoo or religion, but whatever we do when we put our good vibes. So congratulations on that. And please, so you know, feel free to let me know when you guys do come up with something, or if you want to call back into the show and announce it. Everyone that comes on, we leave an open door to them to come back later and tell us what's going on and update us on projects.
Thanks. And people can also find our website, scoutthemovie.com, and we're also on Facebook, so people can find out news that way too if they're interested.
Oh, yes. Okay, so scoutthemovie.com, is that all one word?
Yep.
Okay, and then a Facebook page, it's called Scout the Movie. Okay.
Yep.
Make sure you guys write that down. We will plug it again at the end, but thank you for jumping in with that, because I always like to do it in the middle and at the end, and I should open up with it. Now, this group, if I pronounce it wrong, Film Fatales?
Film Fatales. Like,
yeah, Film Fatales.
Film Fatales,
yeah. Yeah. Lori happened to mention this group to me just in passing in an email, and I was really floored by it because, again, this is my opinion. I'm spending some time in Los Angeles right now, and I've worked in various cities in the film business, and I'm not saying there's not good people, and this is to pretense it with. It's, of course, a cutthroat business, and, of course, we all do have to pay bills and make our voice and find our niche, but when Lori mentioned this group, I was really floored by it because this is something that at most you can find three friends or four friends that always support you, or eventually two of those friends become union and they can no longer work with you, but they still support you. And you know they support you. You know they'd be there if they could. But to know that there was this group of women filmmakers that set out to make sure that there's support and that there's people at screening and that there's feedback on scripts. And this just was something that I've always wanted to be a part of, no matter to whatever degree or whatever happened. Just that artistic community is such an important part of it. I think we all, in the film business or not, and especially outside, when you see a great movie, it's, you know, yeah, Martin Scorsese's good or DiCaprio's a great actor, but it's hundreds of people that make the movie work. So with that, I want to just say the tagline that I see here, and then I would love to hear the group explained by you, because since you were a member, you can still like the film festival. Not be serious was the motto of an international protest movement that formed during the Cannes Film Festival in 2010, when not a single woman made it into competition again. The resulting outcry helped raise consciousness for the gender gap in the film business worldwide. And with that, yourself and other female filmmakers did...
It was a group, it was founded by a director named Leah Meyerhoff when she was trying to make her first feature film. And she had had a bunch of female friends over for dinner who were working in the business, basically just to get advice from them and see how they could help her in any way. And while they were having this dinner, they all thought, you know, this is really a great idea. We should make this formal. We should do this on a regular basis. And so this group was started. It's all women directors and writers for the most part. It started off in New York City, meeting once a month at someone's at one of the members' houses, having dinner, and then the first thing you do is you go around the room and you tell everyone something good that's happened to you that month. And then at the end, you have dinner, you have a discussion about a topic that who's ever hosting it has come up with that pertains to whatever they feel like talking about in the film business. And then at the end, everyone goes around the room again and they ask for something that they need from the group, some kind of help or support or whatever that they need from the group. And besides that, there's also several writing groups that have grown out of this. We often do panels and discussions. We have for our members, if someone has a special skill that could be helpful to others, we have like workshops basically where we teach that skill to other people. We go to each other's openings and premieres and support each other's films. And also there's just a Facebook blog where constantly people are saying, you know, does anyone know where I can find a DP for a shoot tomorrow? Or really just asking for concrete advice or concrete help with things they need. And it's very timely right now because there is a lot of focus going on right now about discrimination against women in the film business. And the ACLU is actually even thinking of starting a lawsuit. I don't quite know who they plan to sue, but I think the studios about this.
Right, I saw that today. Yes, yes.
Yeah, there's this blog that's become quite popular called something like What Shit People Say to Women Directors. It's getting a lot of press at the moment. So it seems to be a real buzz topic at the moment is discrimination against women in the film business. And so this is just a group that's gotten together to support each other, and it is a rare thing. It's a rare thing in almost any business, I think, but it's certainly a rare thing in the film business where people are really just altruistically trying to help each other. And every time I go to one of the dinners, I am just amazed by the talent that is in that room. I mean, people who, you know, Nicole Casale, who made the film The Woodsman several years ago, or Deborah Campmeyer, who made Hound Dog, which was also at Sundance several years ago. Movies that I'm seeing in movie theaters right now, or some of the buzzy films at film festivals. And it's just an amazingly talented group of people who deserve to be working and, you know, able to make the films they want to make.
Yeah, The Woodsman was superb. I remember being totally afraid of Kevin Bacon.
Mm-hmm. He's pretty much been making directing TV episodes. You know, if a man had directed that film, he'd be doing whatever. It is true. But
now, is there a, I guess the only place I would draw the line is that we don't start, like, throwing eggshells at Barack Obama because it's just not the place.
I'm not throwing eggshells at anybody.
Oh, no. I'm just saying, like, that's always where I'm, like, just, like, I tell guests, I'm like, we're not going to talk about war. The thing is that what I always wondered, because I've had this very interesting experience in the film business, and this is the most I would remotely ever say about myself on the show, is that from first mentor to first boss to first major industry contact to my most powerful connection, PA gig, television gig, first journalist to pay me what I'm worth, first magazine to pay me what I'm worth. Every single thing has come from a woman.
Wow.
So for me, I'm in agreement when I hear gender gap, Jennifer Lawrence got $18 million and Christian Bale got $20 million. But then I live this weird existence where I'm like, I don't have any friends that can go on any lot they want. And I don't have any friends who have been VPs of HBO. None of my male friends are millionaires. So I have this really unique thing where I'm like, when I want something, I call a woman. And so I've gotten to kind of be like, there's a midline for everything, and I don't think it's political, and I don't think it goes back to that age old, not all men do this, not all women do that. But I love to hear about things like this because I've gotten to experience both sides. So to tell you the truth, the only place I've ever been where I felt like there was more men than women was being a PA on a set, and the women were the bosses. So it really didn't matter that just the grips and the guys sitting around talking about who had the beer later were guys. I was just like, okay, well, he has the beer, and if it happens to be she, then cool. So I've always been taught to just look at the art and the artist, and I think because I'm so far into that realm, I know Nikki Caro is one of my favorite directors, and it bugs me to even say that she's a female director. I know a great indie director out there on the circuits right now who she played Sundance a few years ago. She won the Santa Barbara International Film Festival. She's out again with a film right now. She's going to be playing at Palm Springs International Short Fest soon. And she's the same way. She's kind of like, she just likes being called a filmmaker. And I just call women directors, directors. So I brought attention to this because I love the idea of what it does. And I think it should be, I know some people in LA doing it with, not male, female, but they're doing it with their culture because they're like, we're Colombian and we're not all cokeheads. So they want to tell stories that don't portray them as drug dealers or criminals or people who sneak into the country. So I think that's really cool. And I totally agree with what you say when it's like someone who, if a guy had done The Woodsman or won any kind of major festival, whatever, there would be a office at the Fox lot and a 3-picture deal. So how is that really dealt with as a whole to keep the positivity that you need to make a film, like in a group like this or in an organization like this?
It's a very positive, supportive atmosphere where we all think there's no reason we shouldn't be doing it, and therefore we're going to go do it. And I think that's what helps. There is, of course, discussion about, yes, there are problems, yes, it isn't a perfect world, but the members help each other in ways where, you know, you get together and you co-write with someone, or someone will produce your film for you, or it's just a very supportive group of people that will help in any way that they can and are able to.
Well, I mean, that's really good. And also too, even a project I'm working right now, I'm a producer and the director is a female, and I think it's superb because in actuality, it's the first director to ever pay me on time. So I'm just like, you know, let the females direct all the films. Like, let Scorsese be a PA and let his PA, direct. So I am looking here, since you had mentioned that ACLU thing, that for those of you that don't know, I guess it dates back a few years ago. It says Valentine's Day 2 years ago that ACLU getting involved. And that's going to be a really interesting development, not only for the history of film, but how it affects all films. It's a weird thing to even be looking at, that it needs to be done. Like you said, if you're around people who have made these films, and I'm sure that's just a tiny list of the films that you mentioned, and then you had Sundance and then now Scout. Is there something so we can, with Scout, aside that the goal is to always sell it or get it out there, do you have any festival that you haven't played that you would love to play? I'm always interested in where filmmakers would love to have their film play.
Well, there's lots of festivals I'd love to play. So it's hard to answer that with one. There's actually, it's not even really a festival. I'm not quite sure what it is. At BAM in Brooklyn, Brooklyn Academy of Music, every year has a sort of miniature film festival where I don't think you actually can apply to be accepted. I think it's just films they've seen wherever that they bring together and show. That's always a great place to see films. There's always a really good, enthusiastic audience there, and they're very supportive of the filmmakers there. That's one place I would love to have my film shown. But there's many places. It's just nice to get it out into the world and have people see it. Anywhere, everywhere.
Being in New York, I love that. Being in New York, have you shown in Tribeca?
No, unfortunately, we did not get into Tribeca. I really wanted to show at Tribeca,
Oh, there should be hometown things. Even though it's New York City, there should be hometown things. Since we've
been
discussing this,
especially since I was living in Tribeca when I started this film, and my daughter grew up in Tribeca. I was hoping that would be one.
Because I've only been there twice, and I stayed in the Upper East Side and in Queens, so I was fortunate to see two very different parts of New York City for what a tourist being there those two times is. But this, since we've mentioned this, we want to make sure that people know there's a website, film, and then it's fatalesnyc.com. Again, that's film, fatalesnyc.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ same thing, film, fatalenyc. This group, to me, I almost feel like I should put on a wig and petition to join. I look enough like my mother, but my beard grows too quick. This sounds like a great group to just go be a fly on the wall for the night. And thank you not only for what that does for your fellow artists, but just for what it does for film as a whole. That's why I really wanted to make sure that we talked about it on the show, because that's anyone that's contributing to the art as a whole, past just their own thing, that's really important, and that's what sustains us. So with that, if there's anything else, do you have anything else that you would like to discuss or promote? We can plug the Scout website again, and of course, for all you people that have listened, if you're just tuning in, please go back and listen to the earlier part. We discussed this great film, Scout, and we'll provide info as we know about more screenings, but we have the director here, and so Lori, if you'd like to promote any websites or screenings, or even if you'd like to mention any associate screenings that are going to be in the New York area or anywhere, please feel free to take this time to make sure that our listeners know about what's going on out there.
Thank you. No, except for the websites at this point, there really isn't anything. I'd love to ask people to support the work that India, my daughter, is doing. Watch The Returned on A&E, and watch some of her work. It's worth seeing her. She's great. But no, thanks. I think we covered it.
Okay, excellent. And that Scout website again was?
Scoutthemovie.com.
And ScoutTheMovie.com and Facebook, Scout the Movie.
Facebook.
Now, was that a premiere at Newport? I forget.
It was our premiere, yes.
Okay, so the premiere was at the recent Newport Beach Film Festival here in, I usually say sunny Orange, Southern California, but today for some weird reason it's raining, and of course the filmmakers could appreciate it. Yeah, well, what's funny is it didn't start raining until we started recording, so go figure. The movie gods are always with us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I want to basically the show, Talking Pictures, and myself has seen films at Newport for 5 years. Scout is definitely in the top 10, if not top 5, of films they've had. Newport is a festival where literally, I think, the absolute worst film I've seen there was good. And so it was just so you know Lori. It was just a great thing to even get in that festival. It's so great how many films Newport brings in. So I'm really glad that Casey, your programmer, told me about it. And we thank you for the time today, my entire production team and our show. We thank you for sharing that because we want to be able to have filmmakers from all over. And as much as we also want you to let us know about any upcoming info with Scout, if you have any other filmmakers who are going to play LA or play festivals or need support in any way, please drop me an email and we would love to talk to them and see if we can support it, even if it's just saying, you know, this great indie film is playing in LA next month. We're here to just help other filmmakers out how we can.
Thank you. Yeah, and thanks so much for talking to me. It was great to talk to you. And I agree about the Newport Beach Film Festival. I saw about 6 other films while I was there, and I was really impressed. They were all really good. Quality.
Yeah,
it was nice to be there.
Each year I wonder, what are they going to do next year? Who are they even going to, you know, who are they going to let in? Is this going to be like Scorsese's outside saying, I didn't get in, I just couldn't. So yeah, so you guys got to check that out and support your film anywhere. And the last thing I want to say is, and I'm sure even though people will be quick to say, well, Lori's in New York, make sure as a filmmaker, wherever you're at, if you have a vision, just start working on it. You don't have to be Tribeca or near Los Angeles or, you know, they always say you have to know people, but I always say it's how you treat who you know. So, you know, you want to tell a story, get out there, do it, do what you can. And as long as you're proud, that's the first goal. The rest is gravy when it comes. So thank you again for joining us today, Lori. And we'll definitely be in touch when we have the show ready for you.
Great. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. You have a great afternoon.
Thanks. You too. Bye.
And that was Lori, thank you for joining us today. That was a great time discussing Scout and the Newport Beach Film Festival. And with that, I'm going to sign off here from Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. And as always, make sure and watch some great movies tonight. Tell your friends, check out Talking Pictures. We appreciate all of you. And aloha.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.